Okay, and open a 44.
Oh, that's written.
Yeah.
34. And open a work session on House Bill 3444. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair, I think as we analyzed the bills that came before our committee, there was a bill that was similar to this that dealt specifically with guns and fixation on guns, and this bill was a little more broad, a little more comprehensive in the sense that it dealt with weapons in general, which was a little bit more broad, considering that in some of the incidences we have, there's more than just guns that are being used. There are bombs and other devices that are being used. So 3444 addressed that. And the reason that I wanted to come and talk to the committee, because I think that the committee will probably appreciate the bill as it is, but something that's taken place recently with the incredible number of incidences that are being reported across the country, and one that was in my district just shortly, I've introduced these amendments, the A4s, and whenever there is a hit list that is uncovered by the police or by the faculty in a given school, we'd like to be able to have the parents of the children who are on that list be notified that their children have shown up on a list. We've also asked that teachers whose names show up on some kind of a hit list be made aware. Now, I did some research on this, and this kind of information is able to be passed on today, even with confidentiality laws, because the confidentiality law specifically says that if the information would pertain to the health and safety of an individual, that you can divulge that information. Now, there are situations in schools where it's not taking place right now. They can do it, they're just not doing it. And one of these amendments specifically say then is in relation to that, that they would, in fact, be required to divulge that information to the teacher and to the students and to any parent that would show up on that list. And that's the purpose of the A4s. We think it would be a welcome addition to that bill, certainly a welcome addition to parents whose children, whose names have been on these lists. And just to give you an idea, there are a couple of schools, one in my district, where lists were uncovered, children were taken out of the school and said, acknowledged what their intentions were, and then the child was allowed to come back to school, and the children who were on the list were sitting next to the child, and the parent was never told. Now, I met with some of the superintendents, and I met with the district attorneys on this, and their estimation is that this is an enormous liability on the part of our schools. Regardless of confidentiality laws, that if they are able to pass this information on, if they know, in fact, that somebody's on a hit list, and if something were to happen, there's going to be liability, and it's just a matter of time until that happens. And so what we're trying to do with this is not only protect the children, I believe it's to protect the schools, and the school districts allowing them or requiring them to notify parents and teachers if their names show up on a list that that would threaten some kind of harm.
Are you offering any amendments? I'm sorry, Senator. I know I just got here. Are you just speaking for
Mr. Chair, Senator Stan, yes, the A4s are my amendments.
Okay.
And I'm offering them to 3444, which I thought was a good, solid bill at the outset. The only thing that was just brought up to me from the Oregon School Boards Association is there are some students that are 18, there are some students that have been emancipated, and the amendments don't say that the student will be notified, it says the student, or that the, and I say that the student will be notified, it says that the parents will be notified, and so potentially that we could make some changes if you thought that was necessary. Actually, I'm not sure that's necessary, but that was the only question that I've had on the amendments.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, having been on the other end of this, being on the list, I've been there, it's nice to know, not very comforting, but I really think you have a right to know. And and you can plan for it, and you just put more cautious.
Again, Mr. Chair,
I think I agree with Representative Sperry. It's just the right that people should have.
Again, Mr. Chair, I want to reiterate that we checked with Legislative Council to find out about confidentiality and where we, what kind of position we'd be putting people in, and we're perfectly able to require this when health and safety of an individual is at risk. So what we're doing here is okay.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for being late. I got caught up right there with some people, but is it your belief that right now administrators or teachers are finding this out and not notifying the parents of the students, or something, if there's a list?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, in fact, that is the case. There are teachers and administrators that have found out about this, and specifically in my district, they knew about it and allowed the children to go back to class together again, even after the threat was made in writing, without notifying the parents, and the parents found out surely by accident, and they were told that the faculty would make sure that the school is safe, don't you worry about it. And given the recent circumstances, they weren't well assured by that.
Thank you. Yeah, I can understand how that could happen, because I think on the part of many teachers, there's confusion as to what might happen to them if they did make known that kind of information. And the importance of this legislation is it would clarify that they, you know, have an obligation and it's in the law. So I think that we need to speak to it in some kind of legal way so the parents, I mean, excuse me, the teacher or whatever, understands that they can make known this information.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Thank you. We have a couple of amendments also around from Representative Loken. Are you familiar with those amendments?
Loken is here, and she can certainly, it's her bill to begin with, so we've talked just briefly about some of those.
Okay. Are you going to go back to your committee now?
I am.
Okay. We'll call you back if we have a question on 334 or 44, but I want to be sure if you're available on 3240.
Absolutely.
But between these two bills, I'm going to hear from the young students an update on the Act. So thank you very much. Representative Loken.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The two amendments deal with comments that were made in the hearing, and one of the concerns was that there be some methods established for reporting. So the -3 amendment for the bill takes care of that and adds on page 1 on line 25, stating the policies adopted by a school district shall, and then the -3 amendment, include staff reporting methods and shall require an administrator to consider, and so forth. So we felt that handled the concern of including in the policy a way to communicate with the school body administrators and teachers.
Okay, questions or comments for Representative Loken on the -3 amendments? Okay, would you proceed with the -5 amendment?
Yes, thank you. And the -5 amendment on page 2 eliminate counselor, psychologist, or psychiatrist on lines 5 is just finishing up line 4 and 8, and inserts mental health professional. So it would read in, for instance, B, the top of the page, line 3, the student would be placed in a setting which would receive immediate attention, including but not limited to office of school principal, vice principal, assistant principal or counselor, or the office of any licensed mental health professional. And that is the word.
It's very important. We work this. Yes, we are. But we can, I'm going to allow anyone to come up to testify on the amendments if you
want me to wait for any motion.
Yes. Well,
Let me say this, then, before we finish. Even though we are in work session, would anyone else like to testify on 34, 44, and the three amendments? We have the first, Jim. Please come up. And Trish, and Laura.
Sure.
Yes, I have a question for Representative Loken. Okay. Representative Loken, do you have time to stay there?
I'll stay here.
Oh, please. Okay. Representative Loken.
Representative Loken, Mr. Chair Loken. I'm a bit concerned on the mental health professional. I think you and Joe have been talking about that concern about that would eliminate some school counselors.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, it is not my intent to eliminate them, and by bringing that child into the immediate attention of the school principals and so on and administration, and then also including the counselor, that would give a choice there before they go to any further than that. I believe that it would allow a decision to be made at the level of a counselor or the principal as to how much further to go with an evaluation.
Maybe Joe Crum will come up a little bit later and address some of his concerns about that.
Okay.
No flash.
Sure. Right. Chris, do you want to proceed to Jim?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I spoke with Representative Sinferi before he left the room on his -A4, and the one concern that we do have is on line 10 and line 11, where it just references teacher. Under the statutory definition of teacher, that only includes those folks that are licensed by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. He would suggest an amendment, and Representative Sinferi indicated that he was fine with this, that instead of teacher, you strike teacher on line 10, and on line 11, and insert the word school employee, because we do have classified employees like our bus drivers or secretaries who may also receive these threats. And instead of just covering the teacher, this would be all-inclusive for school employees. Representative Sinferi did say he supported that and was willing to have his amendment reflect school employee versus just teacher.
Representative Loken, since this is your bill, do you agree with what Jim just said?
Yes, I think that looks good.
Trisha, do you have comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Trisha Smith, representing Oregon School Employees Association. We are very supportive of the conceptual amendment that Mr. Green just mentioned. While we find it hard to believe that any of our classified members would ever be on anybody's hit list, just in case, we'd like to be notified.
Thank you. Yeah, your office is really nice
people. We are very nice people, yes.
Thank you. Laurie, would you come up and take somebody's seat? Yeah.
Good afternoon, for the record, Laurie Wimmer, OEA, and I just wanted to say on behalf of OEA that we are very supportive of House Bill 3444 and the amendments before you. Everybody else has said everything else. With respect to the issue raised by Senator Duncan, I think that the question of the scope of practice issues with respect to counselors and how much mental health assessment they be held accountable for is really the piece that is of concern. And we would just want to state for the record that it would be our hope that mental health evaluations are done by those who are licensed to do them, and school counselors perform a different function. But with that said, we are very supportive.
All right, thank you. Senator Courtney, we have a conceptual amendment, so the president discourages us from doing conceptual amendments. We can amend this and bring it back Wednesday. Is that okay with you, Representative Loken?
That would be great.
The president discourages us. Conceptual amendments does not like that.
He doesn't like him.
He doesn't like that.
But how would he?
Unless he might. Yeah, how would he know?
I don't mean to be.
Cindy, you're listening, aren't you?
I just have to say that this is getting shot. We've done it now. We're starting to do it more regularly in the Judiciary Committee.
Really?
Yes, we are.
They offer a different role anyway.
That's true.
I was just trying to expedite a process that the only conceptual amendment you have is on line 10 and 11 on the -4 amendments, striking the word teacher to add a school employee. And, I mean, you know, I don't know why we don't pay. Can I move? How about this? Can I move the -3 amendments to to House Bill 344. How about that? Can I read
through? Senator Courtney moves the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 344. Is there any objection? I mean, is there discussion? Any objection?
Yes. Oh, no.
You're too late.
No.
You're never too late.
Never too late.
Okay, we have adopted the dash 3.
The dash 3 will
fine. Okay.
I'm going to move the dash 5 amendment to House Bill 3444.
Go slow.
Five.
Senator Courtney moves the dash 5 amendment to House Bill 3444. Senator Duncan.
Yes. Okay, Senator, thank you. I wonder, Joe Crumlick.
Certainly.
Joe is not talking to school district. And there was a concern they had, and I just wanted to get that.
Certainly. Thank you.
All right. Joe, Joe Crumlick, the North Clackamas School District, and I'm just, Jay and I have been talking about this all day, and we're just trying to be make sure that there's as much flexibility for our administrators to be able to evaluate the student at the counselor level, not necessarily a full mental health evaluation, but that there's that opportunity to have that counselor be part of this and participate in the process.
So do you support the dash 3, 4, 5 and the conceptual that we have before?
We're concerned about the dash 4 in that it runs it right up to mental health professionals.
Okay. Dash
5.
But I want to know if you support the other amendments too.
Yeah, we're fine except for the licensed
So you favor the conceptual amendments too?
Yeah.
Talking about all employees.
Right. We're fine with that.
Okay. Further discussion or questions?
No, it's the dash 5 that he said.
Yeah. Separate from the conceptual amendment.
Right. I understand. Okay.
Senator? Yes. The ones they're removing, psychologists, psychiatrists, aren't those mental health professionals?
We have school psychologists and we have school counselors who can make that evaluation on a student. And I want to make sure that counselor can't get ace out of the process.
Well, on page 2, line 3, counselor is still there.
No, it gets removed.
That's A5.
A5 removes it.
On line 3?
Okay. I think it's still there.
It's still there. Principal or counselor.
Yeah.
Yes, and then
Or the office of any
yeah. license. Counselor stays.
They go to the counselor, but then for the evaluation, under C, line 4,
mm-hmm.
they take out the licensed counselor at that point.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Yes,
I think B simply gives options of all of those.
You're talking about line 1?
But C is speaking of an evaluation. And the reason that the word counselor there is questioned is whether a school counselor, would be able to perform a mental health evaluation. However, I can also understand the fact that we need to be able to evaluate that student sometimes for other behavioral reasons, which may not fit into mental health, but maybe that. And if...
What was it talking about? What we
that is accomplished with licensed counselor, that's fine.
Yes, Cindy, would you come up, please?
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
We're only, with policies adopted, only have to consider it, says all those things. We are not taking out that they would consider going to be the school counselor, or then it goes into the floor.
My point is that once you move up the ladder, that you say we will have them evaluated. You're limited as to who will evaluate them. Only a mental health professional can do that evaluation.
Sure. Joe, I'm confused. Okay, if I'm reading this right, what we've done in section B, we've changed and we use any licensed mental health
professional.
Yes. Under the amendment.
I'm sorry. Okay. And the same thing happens again in line 4, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Mental health professional. You didn't have any trouble with it in the first one.
Right.
Correct. But for the evaluation, okay, your school psychologist is licensed, right?
Yes.
And your school psychologist, well, the psychiatrist would be licensed.
Yeah.
Okay, just the counselor.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you really want them to go beyond? Now, that, by the way, the technical point here of a license, because those counselors are licensed too.
Yeah.
Not in the sense of, but they have a license through TSDC, as counselors. But I don't think that's what this intent is it?
No. The concern is that Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, that we may need to go beyond the school teacher counselor, and then we have to have someone who is trained professionally in a mental health evaluation, or perhaps if there's a better word than mental health evaluation. But I did talk to attorneys, and that was the suggestion that I had.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, excuse me. Cindy, you've heard the discussion here. Tell us if the amendments say that what you hear being said, they do.
Mr. Chair, Cindy Hunt, Legislative Counsel's Office, for the record. What it looks like the amendments do are deleting out licensed counselor, psychologist, or psychiatrist and inserting in licensed mental health professional. The amendments don't specifically say what kind of mental health professional. So from what I'm hearing, I didn't hear the beginning part of this discussion surrounding this particular amendment, is that there seems to be some concern about specificity, or is that...
Flexibility. I really think, I don't want to, I don't know how close you can get to it, but one of the schools in Oregon, where there was a tragedy, it was evaluated because of the reputation of the parents and the reputation of the family, and it was that the student should stay. Where if he'd have been taken out, maybe it would have turned out differently. I kind of like what, even if it's slightly more expensive for the district or whatever, for safety, I like what Representative Wilkins come up with. Because there may be too much familiarity with the whole family or whatever, and I just watched a TV program where the school counselor couldn't believe the kid was guilty of what he really did anyway, because she was so close to him. So I really think there's a benefit in getting them out of the school.
Yeah, you two agree with that?
I agree.
Agree to disagree.
I agree with it.
I am
too.
You're comfortable with the backside?
I think so.
Mr. Chair, while I'm comfortable, sort of, my observation is this. Looking at line 1 of page 2, I think the key phrase, at least for me, is in the last part of that line. Let me read the whole thing. Placing the student in a setting where the behavior will receive immediate attention. Mm-hmm. And what gives me pause is that, you know, the reality is that there are schools, and I'm thinking of a couple in my district, where there's one counselor for 700 students. So when you start talking about immediate attention, you know, what are we really saying? Through this kind of policy statement, and when you also consider that many of our communities do not have the kind and quality of mental health professional that we are speaking of here, I mean, there's another set of issues and problems that we're not grappling with, and I just want to put that in front of us as well. It'll be nice to have the policy, but if you don't have the people who can carry it out effectively and really get the help to the students who may need it, then what have we done, really?
What we have done is, like in airports, you don't joke going through the line about, watch out for the bomb in my suitcase. What you've done is get the one threatening everybody out of the building. You can worry about counseling them later, but you get the one that's a little bit out of control out of there.
And I think the point the senator was making, and the critical part, and will receive immediate attention. Wasn't that the point that you wanted to make?
That's exactly the point. And, you know, just to extend my comment, since there seems to be an opening to do this, we're going to be talking about overall school funding in the days ahead. And, you know, we have to ask ourselves the question, as we come up with that funding number, or try to get a consensus around the funding number, will it do anything to address the counseling needs that exist in our schools? Again, you know, I've got a couple of schools, and I know that there are others around the state where you've got one person, one professional, trying to meet the needs of a lot of students who need help, and they can't do it. And what are we going to do to help them out?
Thank you, Senator Duncan.
Sure. I understand what Senator Gordon is saying, although as I look at this, you're talking about a situation that's just happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to take an immediate response. And it seems to me you have a lot of options here. The principal, you know, you can remove that student, put him in a corner for a few moments to decide what you're going to do. The vice principal can be involved, the assistant principal, or the counselor can do some emotional control at that particular moment. Or you can say, this is beyond us, we've got to get some other help in here right quick, like, because we're talking about a serious situation. Now, then, that's the immediate situation for behavior. But then if you determine the plans as they need to go on, then I think then you go beyond what's available within the school building, it looks to me like. You know, and you're talking about a full fledged. I think that's why most of us were sort of holding out that you really needed a well trained professional. And I frankly, with all due respect, and school counselors might not like this, but having been the dean of a school where we trained the school counselor, I don't think that the typical school counselor is qualified for the in-depth mental health evaluation. I mean, they deal with a lot of things, but I think for the in-depth kind of thing, I want them to go beyond that, and I think that does it. You see, I'm feeling pretty comfortable with these amendments the way we have them now. I think so.
Thank you. Senator Courtney? No, I was just trying to think of other bills that are in that would cover this part of counseling. We've got a number of bills in, but I have to talk to a number of legislative counselors that I thought that this person would not fall between the cracks. I can't think of a piece of legislation right now that we're considering that's already passed that deals with that to answer the Senator Gordon's question. So,
further discussion of Dash 5, Senator?
Well, I have a good question about the whole bill.
Okay, we have before us the adoption of the Dash 5. Further discussion? Any objections?
So, order, sir. Let me show you how it will feel. I've learned that I think there's been a clerical error made on lines. Popular error made on lines 10 or 11 of the Dash 4 amendment. And I think the word teacher is misspelled, and it's meant to be spelled S-C-O-O-L-E-N-T-L-E-E-E-O-E-E-E. So I think we can take note of that.
Oh, okay.
We can, I think it was a type of after error made there. But after,
right. Yeah, because I'm glad you brought it up there, because we don't do conduction.
I think it's a type of after error, both there on line 10 and 11. So the word teacher, the type of after error, this song is school employee in both line 10 and line 11. That's what I would suggest.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. Cindy, do you have the Dash 4 amendments in front of you? Could you just read back to me what the senator has suggested we could correct?
Mr. Chair, on the A4 amendments, lines 10 and 11, paragraph E, any school employee whose name appears on a targeted list threatening violence or harm to the school employees.
And that would be an appropriate typographical error correction, would it not?
That's correct.
Senator Courtney has moved the Dash 4 amendments with the appropriate corrections. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
I now make the motion, or does Shannon want to talk to me before I make my motion?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I maybe this isn't the place, but this happened. Our son, when he was a junior, went to playoffs at basketball at the time. And we beat Beaverton. We were number one.
This is crazy.
And so the kids are coming out of there, we're number one, we're number one. Big traffic jam in a parking lot. And the Beaverton kid put his fist through the window and scared the kids to death. And when they got the whimper, they came over inside and told us the window had been knocked out. I was a little upset. And I called the school. And the teachers and the counselors and everybody protested that student. And they said, you send us the bill for the window and we'll make sure it gets paid. But we're not going to tell you who did it. And I look at this and I wonder about those kind of school activities like that where they're threatening between school districts. In the end, because my husband worked for the Department of Ed, he didn't want to make a fuss and he just paid for the window. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder about inter-school things like this.
Well, thank you for the comments. I think the environment has changed enough in the last year or two that we'll see a greater cooperation like you're suggesting. And if we don't, why, we'll go put something into the law that would require a school, in this case, like Beaverton, to report that student who did that. The further, let's see, Senator Courtney moves House Bill 3444 as a matter of the floor to do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Courtney? Yes.
Senator
Duncan?
Aye.
Senator
Boyd? Aye.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Chair Hudson? Aye. Motion is passed. Senator Courtney will carry the bill. And now we will open informational meeting on invited teachers, and thank you, Representative Logan.
Thank you.
I should have asked you if everything was okay in the way the bill is.
It's
okay, thank you. Fine, and I'd like to invite to the table Carlicia Lewis, Steve Jones, Sam Roberts, and let's see, we'll just have three of them coming in. Is Nancy Brink here also? Oh, okay. Welcome to the committee. Really appreciate you taking your time. You're here today to kind of give us an update on how the Educational Improvement Act of the 21st century is working, in your opinion. So if you would just identify yourself for the record and tell us what we should hear.
All right. Well, my name is Stephen Jones, and I'm a sophomore at Ulysses S. Grant High School in Portland. I would like to hear my opinion now.
Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Well, you know, this is one of the first years that the Certificate of Initial Mastery program has been implemented in the Portland Public Schools curriculum. And overall, my general impression of it is that it's a good idea, but the manner in which it has been implemented often is not the best way of achieving the goals set by that I think the program has. I think that it's a very good idea to have some sort of minimum standard that all students in Oregon, I guess, are required to meet. But I think that oftentimes, or at least some of the time, the way in which it's been administered hasn't been very effective as far as getting the kids to meet that standard. That's just my general vague impression of it, just from having worked with it over the course of this school year.
Okay, we'll reserve our questions so all three of you had a chance to speak on it. And of course, you can say more things if they come to mind, but please introduce yourself and proceed.
My name is Carlia Lewis. I'm a sophomore at Jefferson High School. I'm in the biotech program there. And my overall impression of the STEM-CAM certificate or whatever we're supposed to be doing. Most students don't have a clear understanding of what they're supposed to be doing and what kind of criteria or whatever they're trying to meet. It's like some teachers our teachers didn't prepare us until like the final 2 weeks, I should say, before the test was given out. And I agree with what she was saying about how we weren't really prepared, and then some of the questions on the test were, like, really awkward. We never heard of some of the things that were on there, so it was just, like, big trivia. Like, okay, you guess and you get it right. If you get it right, you pass, basically. Yeah, I think I come a little more after.
Okay. Thank you, Curly. Sam?
Yes. My name is Sam Roberts. I'm a sophomore at Cleveland High School. I would like to talk about the time. It's very time-consuming. And also, I think we need to spend more time teaching the teachers how to grade the speeches that we have to give for the sin. And also, the questions are somewhat confusing on some of the tests, and we need to spend more time, like, being taught how to answer these questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking your time. As you know, we have made, over the years, changes in what we call the Act, which was passed in the 91 session, and we've made some changes. It still could not be called a perfect document, and the changes that we want to stay the course, we want to, you know, have you learn so that you can meet these high standards, and so it takes this kind of interaction to get that done. Members have a comment or question? Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank each of the three students from Cleveland and Grant and Jefferson High School for being with us this afternoon to help us understand what your experiences have been in the classroom as you try to meet these higher standards. And I have several questions for you. First of all, and this is a question for each of you, what information has been shared with your parents or family members by the school that helps them understand what the SIM standards are?
Well, it's mentioned in our in the newsletter that my school sends home, and I think on a monthly basis, they will mention if they have a SIM CAN test coming up. You know, they'll have a calendar of the events the upcoming week, and so the parents are notified in that manner. But if they don't read the newsletter, then I don't think that the kids often communicate to them that they're being tested, and I think at at the beginning of the year information night for parents, I believe the teachers may cover very briefly. They only have 10 minutes to talk to an entire classroom full of parents then. So I think then they may go over very briefly what kind of things that their kid will be exposed to as regards the SIN CAN testing that year. But beyond those two things, I don't think there's any real effort to make sure that the parents know exactly what the standards are and how they're being tested.
Mm-hmm. Senator, the only information I think that our parents get out from the Jefferson High School area is that when their kids come home and tell them, oh, Mom, we had to take this STEM test today and it was so hard, I don't know if I pass, what if I don't pass, and all the other stuff, but I think they gave a newsletter, or when we had our open house night at the school, I think they went over very briefly. They really didn't get the parents to get on their kids about studying for the SIM or, you know, prepare for the SIM. That was the only thing. If the students went home and told, so there wasn't a lot of information given out about the SIM in campus.
Yes, my school, Cleveland, they sent out newsletters. And I think that there are meetings for parents to come to, but I'm not entirely sure about that.
Mm-hmm. A follow-up question. Could each of you talk about what the general attitude or mood is at your school amongst your peers about the new standards? I guess I am asking you to generalize, but what do you hear from your friends and peers about having to meet the standards? What are some of the frustrations they're feeling? But also, if there's something positive that's going on that we need to also hear, could you please share that?
Senator Gorby, members of the committee. I would say that there is generally often a very negative feeling about these tests, and I think it's perhaps because it's in the first few years of trying to incorporate this into the curriculum that I think a lot of teachers did not prepare well enough for it or budget enough time in order to prepare and administer the test properly to us. So what happens is often, like, I'll give you an example from very recently. My English teacher didn't tell us until about 2 days before it was assigned that we would have to do a persuasive paper for our SIM standard, and so we were left with one weekend during which we're also working on a huge project to also somehow find time to turn out a two-page, persuasive paper on something that was just on a book actually we just finished reading that was assigned 2 days before it was due, more or less. And while that may not sound like a very difficult, very strenuous assignment, it's still an added stress and pressure that a lot of times it doesn't feel like we need. So I think there have been a lot of cases like that this year where in addition to the curriculum that our teacher had already planned, we've also had some sort of SIM assignment to either prepare for or actually do on our own time outside of class. And that has, I believe, distracted. And I believe I don't speak alone in thinking this, that is detracted from the time that we had to learn and the time that our teachers had to teach us. So I think a lot of people feel that it has not been incorporated very smoothly into the curriculum. And that's probably the major problem that most of, like, myself and my peers have with it at Grant.
Senator Gorlian, committee. Coming from the reconstruction of Jefferson High School for the first year, to me, for the teachers, it was a lot of pressure for them to prepare their lesson plans and whatever they had in store for the students, plus go over the STEM and the requirements and the benchmarks and everything that they had to go through. It put on a lot of pressure for the teachers, but then for the students, and I think for everybody, it was like, their attitude changed once they heard about the SIM. You know, most of them were unclear about what was going to happen. And they started to think, like, okay. So the question that they were asking were, okay, so what happens if we don't pass the SIM? What do we do? Then they were talking about how they got to retake it. So they started saying, well, I don't have to pass it. I'm going to graduate anyway. What is the SIM? And I don't know if they're sure about, like, the STEM supposed to be meant for only Oregon colleges or something like that. I mean, we don't have a clear understanding, so our attitudes are like, so what? Okay, if I pass, I pass. If I don't, I don't.
At our school, the feeling is mostly negative. Most people do not like it. We have petitions going around against STEM. There's many sheets that have been filled up. And I know I have many friends that didn't participate in taking the test. They just randomly picked letters on the multiple choice and turned it in and left. So that's our feeling. Cool.
One last question, Mr. Chair, if I may. As students, now, each of you are preparing under the SIM. Is that accurate?
We have taken it already.
Each of you have taken it. Okay. And
we haven't taken was the informative speech part of it.
All right.
Due like this month.
All right. What supports do you need as students in order to be successful? Again, I know that's a general question, but is there something that's missing in your school experience that would help you be more successful? Is there something more you need from your school community, from adults in the community. When you think about the support that would make you, that might help you be more successful, what comes to mind?
Well, Senator, I certainly can't speak for Jefferson or Clare Cleveland or any other school, but at Grant, I think we have very, it's a very supportive community, just in the school and also the families of the kids in the school. I think we already have a very, just in general, a very supportive atmosphere there. And a lot of the kids are from very stable families who have, you know, who have encouraged them to succeed, and they've responded to that encouragement in a positive way by wanting to succeed. But if anything, I would say that school in general this year has seemed to be more of a grind than in years past, been more strenuous, and a lot of the times, forgive me, but some of the stuff we've been asked to do has seemed almost without a point, as if the intention is merely to torture us. And I know that sounds brutal and graphic, but I'm a student, I'm good at dramatizing things. And so I think if anything, that if the curriculum were sometimes made to be less busy work oriented, and I think that's one thing that Tim does tend to bring is a lot of work that does not really challenge you mentally or inspire you as much as just make you make a checklist in your head. Like, you know, if you're writing a paper that has to be according to some narrative standards, say, all you do is say, okay, you know, have I done that? Have I used, like, a metaphor or a simile or figurative language? You know, have I used the correct number of periods and so forth? So I think a lot of what has been happening lately this year is just more work that has not inspired me to work harder or to try my absolute best on it. So that's if I had a choice of one thing I could make different, that would probably be it. Okay.
From the support part, the only thing we really need at our school is a lot of encouragement for the students that have that attitude that, okay, well, what about the students? Right. We have more parent support and community support this year because of the reconstruction and everything, but we're still missing that encouragement and funding for books. But everything else, it's all up to the students to make it happen. The only thing that we could use is the encouragement to have the students want to do it and make it fun in the process. I mean, if we just have a lecture every day, with no fun in it, nothing's going to happen. It's just going to be like, oh, okay, math, will be. But this encouragement is make it worthwhile. Make us enjoy it instead of make it like torture, like he said. I mean, there's no fun in torture.
I think people need to be more informed, the students, the teachers, and the parents. And I don't think we should take time out of the day to do this, but send home letters and give just a lot of information so everyone knows what exactly is going on.
Oh, yeah, and prepare us more, too. Give us more time to prepare, because for this year, sophomore, having to take the exam, it's like that. Everything was just rushed at us, and we have to take everything just like that. No time to prepare. So it was like a rushing process. It wasn't run smoothly like it should have been.
Thank you all very much for your thoughtful comments. I appreciate you being here very much. Thank you.
Senator Duncan?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Junior. You're doing a great job. I just remember a few things. I was curious.
Would you identify yourself to the students? You're a pastor student or what?
I'm a graduate of Denville High School, so we didn't have the same as him.
And
I'm a teacher.
And
I'm kind of interested in education, I guess you might say. Yeah. And that's enough for
These people understand he's a former state superintendent of public instruction, and so what we're trying to do is gather information
from you to take to the present superintendent to tell him how we think it can make it better. So
I always bad season. I think the always have to take has been with a grain of salt. But anyhow, I'm curious. You've been talking about the 10th grade and the SIM and all the discussion that they're involved in. When do you suppose was the first time you heard SIM? Can you think back when you might have heard each one of your...
What about freshman year?
Yeah, Senator Duncan, I believe it was probably in the 8th grade, around the end of 8th grade or the beginning of 9th grade, that the standard version. Yeah, because I believe in 8th grade in my English class, we had to do papers in the various SIM modes, you know, the persuasive, narrative, imaginative, all that stuff, and our teacher told us that was a practice for the things we'd have to do in 9th and 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
I think that.
I think it was about freshman year.
I heard about it in 8th grade.
8th grade.
And I heard we were going to be the first year to train.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. 8th grade year. Yeah.
8th grade year.
Yeah, about
8th grade. Well, I was just kind of curious because my own school district didn't have grandchildren at school. I knew that they were doing in the middle school. I was surprised, I have to admit, I was surprised when my grandson started making reference to the SIM as a seventh grader, and I was agreeing. You know, there were times when I was facing band, I wasn't sure that you get a message down and you'd be happy if the teachers knew what was happening. And so I started hearing that back and then realized students were starting to become aware of it. And I know that's just my particular district, and I'm not sure of the districts, that's why I was kind of curious. Because I think the idea is eventually it isn't, I suppose it's in the last minute study hours, but the concept is that you should be working on it at all levels by the time you're in the third grade, the fourth grade, the fifth grade, and so forth. You're working, so by it's a culmination. So all of a sudden, you take the teacher test in the 10th grade, and those are the skills you should have developed through the whole system. So as you've all identified, that it's the first time through, you're the first guinea pig, so you find all of the flaws with it, and then you've been very helpful, because I think what we found as a committee that there hasn't been probably adequate preparation of teachers, getting them prepared for it too, and as you say, the whole concept of awareness with the parents. I think the day when the parents start thinking that our parental involvement helping our children get ready for it isn't just past the SIM, but the idea of the SIM is that you have basic skills that you know are going to work for you as you go into those last years of high school and on to college. You've been very helpful today, that's why I was kind of curious where you first started hearing about it. And thank you for being the guinea pigs. 10 years from now, you know, it'll be very easy, and you'll say, gee, I remember when we were the first ones going through it, so good luck to you.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm very impressed that just the terminology and things that you're talking about now make you realize that the system is working.
Senator Shannon?
I'm really interested in this too. I would like to know if any of you, and I'd like each to answer it also, if you have any older brothers and sisters.
Thanks, Senator Shannon. I do not. I have one younger sister who's 12.
Okay. You have older ones?
Yes, I have a lot of brothers.
And they're older?
Yeah, I have older sisters and brothers.
Okay, do you think, you're a sophomore?
Yes.
Okay, and do you think that your sophomore year is more challenging and you have more opportunities available to you than your older sisters?
Yeah, I think it's more challenging, but I have a lot more opportunities, yeah.
Like, you have more AP classes, or is that next year?
No, we, in the morning time at Jefferson High School, we have a STEM preparation class that lasts for about, say, 35 minutes at the most.
What do you do in that?
Tell you the truth, nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
You just do it?
Basically.
That's a nice place to start. Okay, and then, see, in some school districts, the kids have told us that the AP classes that were offered are now gone. and that their older brothers and sisters were able to take, they were able to take it, but because they have to adjust for this reform in the finances and the trim and the cam, their AP classes are gone. If they could have, would have been, did any of your older brothers and sisters take the AP class with advanced placement?
No, Miss Well, my sisters was in like business classes and stuff. They weren't even thinking of this, and STEM was nowhere to be found.
Right, but were there, are there as many foreign languages available in your school today?
No, the only one we have this year is Spanish.
Were there any more before?
I think we have French.
French, so now you're down to Spanish. Okay, this meant my turn. My turn. Boy, is it my turn. There's one thing that I wanted to ask you, because that's what I believe. I'm a teacher, too. I believe that it has cost us from the last year. But also, what?
It has. Like,
it has
computer classes, too. But me, I take advantage of everything that I can get a hold of. But for the other students, I mean, the computer classes are filling in, and our classes are becoming crowded because of the limited space elsewhere.
Okay, my other concern that I have is that what I hear from the teachers, what I hear from the parents, what I hear from the students is move the timeline, because we don't like it, because our teachers are absent learning how to do this during the school year. They want the teachers rather prepare in the summer than be gone during the school year. So you have an opinion on that? Have you noticed in your school our teachers gone?
No, like 2 weeks ago, we got out of school early for the teachers to meet at, like, Grant and all of us actually got out of school early. But other than that, it was only a couple of days out of this year that my math teacher, science teacher, and English teacher were gone.
Preparing for the STEM and the CAM.
But that was, I think most of it happened way after we took our math STEM.
And you had subs go while they went to go learn more about it.
And subs, they're not helpful.
No, you lose days.
Yeah.
It was a sub, I know. Okay, did you have a comment on the questions I've just asked? Do you think you've lost options? Electives?
I'm not sure, but I think we did lose some languages, or one language. And on the other question, our teachers have been out for some same preparation classes, but I don't think they're enough. It's enough preparation for them, because they don't know exactly what they're doing.
Do you understand how many more millions we're spending now on education, though, because of this? And what I hear from you kids, it doesn't seem worth the millions that you're getting, the benefit. Do you have a comment, or do you think it's more challenging?
Are you asking, is school challenging now? That's,
well, this new form. If you had brothers and sisters went through without it.
Yeah, it is challenging because it's harder now.
It's harder.
Yeah, so.
And I have one, I think you were the one. What's your first name?
Carlita.
Carly, yeah. Carlita, I think it was that people don't know what's going on. They're not communicating.
Yeah.
That really. I know you're not responsible. I'm not responsible. I didn't have a vote in it. But in the interim last session, the e-book, which is the in-between legislature, gave the Department of Ed $1 million to help communicate to everybody. Did you hear those ads on the radio about the sheep herders? Mm-hmm. If you don't get your STEM and CAM, they're going to be a sheep herder?
No.
You didn't hear those? Well, when they got the communication dollars, that's where it was spent. Now, do you have any comment about what I just asked about? Have you lost choices at school?
Well, it's funny. I think actually the opposite has happened with us in some cases. I think there are more, I know that just for the next year, there are a lot more science classes being offered as in a second year AP chemistry class for the first time. And there's a couple, I think, like marine biology and vertebrate zoology that were added. So the science department, I believe, has expanded quite a bit. I think we may have lost a language or two. They're not being taught as frequently. I think next year, I think like Latin and Japanese will only be one period a day. Or something along those lines. So, I don't think we've lost them entirely. I think they're still offered. But since they're being taught for fewer periods, they're not available to as many students.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I don't know if we've lost or gained any.
recently.
Is it, one last, and is it your hope that your kids have this opportunity in high school?
Take this in?
Mm-hmm.
If this runs smoothly, if they don't have to go through what I'm going through now, of course, I want my kids to have the best of everything. So I want them to be up there with everybody else.
Some parents, I know you, that's the first time I've heard that the kids just played with their exams. Some of them have told how the kids skipped school those days, just didn't go and take them, didn't really, and they were, you know, top of the class kids. These kids skipped in the 10th grade that you know of?
I wasn't really aware of this. I think in general a lot of people don't take it very seriously, you know, sort of.
Well, that's really important that you told us this, because I'm going to be the one that says, look, it's not working, and if the kids aren't taking it serious, that's not fair of me to say that, because if the kids don't take it serious, then it's not fair for us to use it as a tool to judge. Thanks.
You know, I might just add to you about the way this legislature works and the genius of the legislative process is the work that goes on in committee like this and over in the House. And on the floor. And we all find lots of opportunities to disagree with each other on any subject. We have 3,500 bills or so are here. And my colleague, the senator from Brooks, we have been on this committee, 95, 97, 99. We basically agree on a lot of things, except our life experience have made us, you know, come to different conclusions on the sin and so forth. I have two daughters and a son-in-law who teach in the Beaverton School District, and they are frustrated, and there is a lot of burnout on, you know, trying to implement the sin. However, they think we're moving in the right direction, teaching these new higher standards, and I promise you at Jefferson High School that there will be some improvements in your pre-sin classes, because Leela Roberts is doing everything she can to improve the opportunities for you children, and that there will be some improvement. And so you see, that's the benefit of coming down here and telling us, because it's up to us to make the law, as we did with 3565, and we all have experiences, whether we're a teacher or whether we have children or teachers, that we think that, you know, we're heading in the right direction, but we need you to come and share with us, just like you're doing.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say thank you to each one of you kids, and thank you to the district, because I kind of expected it to be kids that were all glowing about it, thinking it was great, kind of cherry-picked, and I think you did a good job, and I really appreciate your honest answers.
No, that's for real.
You know, I will say, since all three of you are from Portland Public School System, the high school is closest to my home in Cedar Mill, Sunset High School. I've had a young man interning for me a couple of days. His name is Alex Barankoff. He's a Russian Jewish immigrant, has been in this country for 9 years, and talked about a conscientious student. And he also has drafting a petition, you know, to change the sin, because he has applied to a half a dozen different universities around the country, and the fact that you have a SIM, at least at this point, makes no difference. You need that high school diploma. So we obviously, as you pointed out, need to make the SIM relevant. And it is relevant, but it won't become relevant until, you know, universities say it is. And one other thing that we've heard a lot of comment on, you know, from day one, well, I say day one, from 95 especially, when I came back after being gone away, the business community has been very supportive of the Act. And some would say, well, of course they are, because they want to have well-trained worker bees so that they can have qualified employees at a lower price. Now, are you offended by someone even thinking that, or in your mind, what does that say to you? And the reason I say that is in the Saturday paper, there's a report on pre-employment applications, and it showed the students that are involved with the, you know, applying, the SIN students that are applying for jobs, this pre-employment thing, scored much, much higher than the students who are just working towards, you know, a high school diploma. Would you agree with that? Is what's happening in your schools, or is that not true? Or how do you feel about people saying the only reason that the business community, for instance, supports the SIM is that they're going to have a larger group of well-trained workers at a lower price?
Go ahead. Well, Senator, as I understand it, a serious problem facing the world today is underemployment. You know, I think that any program that would make businesses more easier to hire people is probably at least has some inherently good facets system, just because it would get more people, you know, to work every day and get more people to wake up in the morning and something to look forward to and so forth. So if that's how businesses feel about it, then that's great. You know, that'll help a lot of people out. If businesses start looking for that for those sorts of abilities when they hire employees.
Okay. Thank you.
My take on it is that businesses can have this demand or whatever, and people will want to pass this in so they can get a good job. But I'm about to pay, I don't know. Passing this in, I'm just thinking like, some people are good test takers, and some people aren't. So what if you pass up somebody that's better than the person that passed the SIM? They just couldn't pass it because they don't take tests that well. It's kind of hard for someone that's not good at taking tests to make it in the world if you got to have the SIM. And I could be better than the next person, but just because you passed the SIM doesn't make him better than me.
Okay. This is a hard question to answer. I don't know. Okay. No comment.
Okay. Or, Mr. Chair, if you don't have a comment about it, at this moment, today, if you're comfortable writing something later that you'd like to share with the committee, feel free to do that.
I'd just like to
certainly thank you, Senator Shannon.
That I'm wonderful, but the criticism that was just given was not my position. My position is that the SIM and the CAM are so high that the rest of the people that turn out to be worker bees, well, we can't qualify, we can't let us go into the workforce. We'll be trained, not educated. And a very elite, a very few will be educated. The rest of us will be trained for the workforce. And that's my criticism of it. I think all American kids have the right to be educated. It doesn't hurt to quote Shakespeare while you're loading a truck. And I think that we should educate our young people and not train them.
Senator Duncan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With my school district, North Carolina, where the study was done, it was an outside study, and where the SIM students did perform much better. And I think that there's a factor involved, too. That particular school district, North Carolina School District, has taken this very seriously from day one. And by the way, and I'm not putting Portland out, because Portland's a much bigger system trying to put it all together. But that district believes in it, and is making it work. And that's the very, very important factor. I keep reminding people that's why it's important that we be positive. That's why it's important that the school districts be positive and make it work. Because that's, if you do that, it will work. And the concept is all children can learn, and the responsibility that you have, getting to the STEM, is to get the kids there. And you don't all of a sudden decide at the eighth grade, oh, we're going to prepare our kids for the STEM. And that's why it is difficult for the current guinea pigs, you might say, because all of a sudden, in a crash kind of a thing, they're trying to put together. The whole concept of the SIM is over a period of time, and you're developing it from K, even the preschools, straight through. And so in time, I think you will have a better workforce, you'll have a better society in general, and I'm not one of those who believes that education is just to train people for work. That's a very important factor. But I want people to be good citizens, good family members, good voters,
all of those factors that make a good society. And I think that's what the whole concept is. And it also says, if you don't necessarily, you might not be there at grade 10. And if you aren't there at grade 10, it behooves the local school district, as I understand it, the responsibility is with the school district to ensure that that student gets the training. Whatever extra force you have to give to ensure they get, you have a couple more years, you know, left within the school system. And that's the whole concept. And so I think it's exciting what I'm hearing from you folks in a large district. It's had a tough time putting it all together. I think it has the potential. As I said, my own school district is working. Now, by the way, when I say it's working, that doesn't mean that there aren't flaws in the system, there aren't people. I mean, I can, anytime you want, I can give you awards. I can match your award stories any day, you know. But I can also, not today, but I'm not going to do it today, but I can also point out the many, many good things, and those become good stories, too.
Other questions?
I won't thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to thank the students 1,000 times for being here today. Mm-hmm. Your comments are very helpful. We don't hear enough from students. And you've helped us. And I'd also like to thank Luke Frederick from Portland Public Schools and Dan Levy also for helping to make it possible for the students to be here today.
Thank you very much. We really do appreciate it. Is Nancy Brink still here? Oh, okay. So you may be excused from the table. And thank you very much. And Nancy, welcome to the committee. And committee members, T&E is not meeting today, so we don't have to get out of here at 3, but of course, I do want you all around for the discussion on 3240. Okay, we can probably pull you out if we need to hear it.
I'll come back.
This year, judicial at 3. Okay?
I have a group I have to see just for a minute.
Certainly. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Brink. I teach in the Bethel School District in West Eugene. We're kind of sandwiched between Eugene and Fern Ridge.
Sure.
I have taught 27 years. I currently teach 4th and 5th grade. And I have some concerns with the state testing. First of all, I'm a proponent of education reform. I believe we needed to kind of pull ourselves together and have a focus that we can all move toward. However, I have two concerns. One is what happens to kids, and the other is with the testing itself. The tests are so difficult that it's not okay to be average anymore. It used to be that an average kid could go through school and they may not be the cream of the crop, but they could read and they can do math and they could feel good about themselves. In order to get a 4 on most of the state tests, you have to be an AB student. And my concern as an elementary school teacher, I teach 4th and 5th grade, 5th grade being one of the benchmark years, that now we have started in first grade preparing these kids. We're moving in that direction. Teachers are giving benchmark scored assignments to go in a student portfolio. It's not enough for the teacher to see that student at this point has not mastered the skill, but it goes into the portfolio and the students must write a reflection. And at the top of that reflection is the student either met or does not meet the benchmark. And so how long will it take an elementary school student of average, or in my case, I have kids in my room with IQs of 80, 85, 90. If I sat with them day in and day out, they're still not going to memorize, and all of this is memorization. It's not necessarily skills that are tested. They're never going to have all of those skills, but they're going to see does not meet, does not meet, does not meet, does not meet, time and time again. And I really admire these three young people who are up here, but I wonder what the attitudes will be when the average student, just the nice average student that may or may not go to college, perhaps can, if they really work hard, but they're the C student. They're going to see from first grade on does not meet the standard. So that was my first concern. Secondly, with the tests and the types of information, in the fifth grade, I will be giving my students a test at the end of January, first of February, two tests. One is a math problem-solving test in which they work for over an hour on one problem. The other one is the writing test. And in fifth grade, there are the four modes. And I maintain that, yes, I think we should be teaching those modes, but fifth grade should only test on two of them. Choose two, I don't care which two. Two that we can really focus on. I would say imaginary is not one that they should be writing, or in fifth grade, there isn't enough form there. But the narrative, expository, those are ones persuasive. So they work on those. So we prepare for those, and we don't wait 2 weeks or 2 days before. We've spent December, January, as well as the previous years, but I mean really honing those skills. Then we leave February, and we have up till April. Our years, it will only be two-thirds over, but we will, our students with our name on those tests will be tested again then on science and social studies and math and reading. Well, again, I have no problems with tests as long as they're realistic. When we test students in science and social studies and the math test, we're basically not testing those skills. We're testing whether they can read that material. We can't read the test to them. So if they can't read sedimentary or symmetry or some of the other metamorphic, they may know if they hear that word, they may know what it means. But we're not allowed to read them the test. So in essence, it's not a science test or a social studies test or a math test. It's a reading test. In order to be exempted from the test, or even modified, you practically have to dream in a second language. So even my students who go to help for reading, or I have students in the fourth grade, and I will have them as fifth graders, I'll keep them for 2 years, still can't tell me the days of the month and days of the week, or the names of the month and the days of the week. It's not because they haven't been taught that. For whatever reason, forever, I don't know, little synopsis tricks, they cannot remember. So then we go to something like social studies. Well, I'm sorry I'm rattling. I just get so impassioned with this. We go to social studies, and we're not asking these kids if they can, well, they have to use timelines and other things. But as a fifth grade social studies teacher, we start with the land bridge, go to Native Americans, whip over to Europe. This is after, of course, a mapping unit so they know where Europe is. Study the main countries that will focus on colonization. We do early explorers. We get to the New World. We talk about the different colonies and the dynamics of each. And these are things that can kids have to role play, and they have to be that plantation owner. They have to be that industrialist in the North. We get through that, but on the state test for fifth grade social studies, they ask about people we don't ever even get to. So it doesn't even match our curriculum. So we have to decide whether we're going to recreate curriculum that reflects the state test, because the state test does not reflect our curriculum. How many of you know who Dr. Charles Drew is? You read about him later? It's in the fifth grade social studies test. So why, you know, you think, well, maybe you do know. I had to look the person up. I didn't know. When we barely get past the Revolutionary War, these kids are asked about Cesar Chavez. All it is rote tests, and like these people, let's make school fun. Well, the simulation games, the role-playing, all those types of things that make education fun. Putting on a play about all the inventors. We don't have time to do that anymore because we have, this is social studies alone for the fifth grade. And it's immense. My tag kids, yep, they probably could, if I really pushed them and went person, they might be able to memorize who Dr. Charles Drew is. I would rather someone said, if you want to know who Dr. Charles Drew is, what do you do? What books do you look in? Do you look up D for Doctor, D for Charles, D for Drew? So when somebody wants to know that type of information, are we giving them the skills, not the facts that they need to have. So not being able to read a test, the tests that don't reflect our curriculum, if we're going to have this as a curriculum, what do we give up? Because we have people writing in the newspaper now, why aren't teachers teaching manners? Why aren't teachers teaching values? We used to be able to model and hopefully reinforce what families taught. But now they want us to do that. You add that to the technology training for kids these days. You add that to the family life, pros and cons of whether we teach family life or not. Fire safety, pretty soon gun safety. Our date has not changed since Faircat started this whole process. We still have kids 6 hours a day. You take away lunch and recess, we do have to feed them. And now we feed them breakfast. And we have, I teach in a very poor area. And 50% of my students in my school are on free and reduced lunch. We have Highway 99, which has a homeless shelter. And I'll just leave it at there's motels and trailer parks that charge $800 a month for fleas and lice.
Nancy, we have a lot of questions we'd like to ask you.
All right.
But if I could interrupt a minute, virtually each one of us have a 3 o'clock meeting, and we do, but we'll stay after we get this next bill. We have a public hearing and a work session that we must get out, and I hope that you can stay. I know it's you're probably driving back to Eugene, but we should be back to you in about a half an hour. We'll reserve our questions to Lynn. Thank you very much for your testimony. So I'll close the informational meeting, and I will open up the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3240. Gene Thorne, please. And members, what I'd like to do is hear Gene for 10 minutes, and then hear Ron Sinceri for 10 minutes, and then we'll go into and anyone else who wants to testify and go into a work session. Make notes on questions that you want to ask Gene. I'd like to have those questions asked of Gene after we hear from Representative Sinceri. So, Gene, welcome to the committee. We're here on A. and Gross House Bill 3240, and we'd appreciate it if you would present the governor's amendments and why they are a good idea.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jean Thorne, the Governor's Education Workforce Policy Advisor. What I'd like to do today is confine my comments to some amendments that the governor proposes, the Dash 5 amendments. These amendments would also actually allow the governor to sign Senate Bill 100, the Charter School Bill. And so what I'd like to do is really talk about the Charter School Bill and how these amendments would fit into that. As you know, the House Committee spent an extensive amount of time working on that bill, and the changes that were made by that committee allowed the bill to meet almost all of the principles that the governor had outlined earlier in the session, the first week of the session when we first began hearing that bill. There were two issues remaining in Senate Bill 100B and Gross that he has expressed concerns with, one related to teacher licensing and one related to collective bargaining. Actually, two provisions related to collective bargaining. He had asked on the issue of collective bargaining and on the issue of fair dismissal that the committee include both of those sets of laws in the list of unwaivables, meaning that charter schools cannot waive those provisions. The committee did not choose to do that. However, in reviewing other changes the committee made to the bill that do allow an employee choice, he felt that there was some measure there of employee choice, which was important to him, so he's therefore dropped his objection to collective bargaining and fair dismissal provisions as long as they are stated in the B and Gross bill. The provisions in the bill related to teacher licensing, however, remain an area of significant concern to him, and he has noted that he will veto the charter school bill if the issues around teacher licensing are not addressed. And House Bill 3240, with these amendments, provide a vehicle to address that concern. In the original principles that the governor put forward relating to charter schools, he supported licensure of all professional staff, quote, pursuing greater use of the instructional resources from the community through the alternative forms of licensure available through teacher standards and practices.
Excuse me, Junior, where are you on the amendments?
I'm just talking in general at this
point. Oh, okay. You aren't specific. Okay.
So I'll be there in just a moment.
All right.
He did encourage the House Committee to look closely at what kinds of alternative forms of licensure are available to teachers' parenting practices. And I think we had a meeting after it moved to the House that Senator Harkin, Senator Castillo, Representative Sincero, and Representative Morris had attended. And we did, again, encourage that they look at the alternatives. And the committee did have lengthy discussions with Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to determine what kind of alternatives were available. They talked about the welder, the person from Intel, the musician. There were a number of examples given. And in every example that the House Committee gave to Teacher Standards and Practices, there were alternatives available. There's professional technical licenses. There's what's called a transitional license, and there's a limited license. And so every example, there were alternative forms of licensure currently available. But the charter school bill that did pass out of the committee in the House still only required that 50% of the FTE be licensed. The governor strongly believes that if public dollars are being used to support charter schools, then the parents and the public deserve to know that the background qualifications the teaching staff have undergone some kind of process of public review, public accountability, and that they've demonstrated that they have some background that is relevant to the teaching position. And so although it appeared that the current alternatives provided sufficient flexibility for charter schools, the governor has been willing to support the development of yet another alternative, a public charter school teaching license, which would provide one additional alternative. If you look at page 4 of the Dash 5 amendment, you'll see the process is outlined for applying for a public charter school teaching license.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Is there any difference between the Dash 5 and the House Minority Report?
No, there's not.
Okay.
This is the same as the House Minority Report, I understand. Under this process, the charter school and a prospective teacher would be required to co-apply to TSPC. The charter school would know here's the teaching position that the applicant would fill, and then the applicant would provide a description of their background that's relevant to the teaching position, which could include any post-secondary education or other experience. So it could be determined only based on experience. The license would then be renewable, again, under a joint application every 3 years. There would be no additional education or training required. There has been a question of would they be required to engage in teacher education courses or continuing professional development. No, they would not. At a minimum, this process of teacher licensing would assure that those teaching our children will have some level of experience or education that relates to their teaching position, that their education work experience would have been verified, which is the process that TSPC goes through, and also that they have not had a teaching license revoked for some reason, which again is another part of the process of TSPC. So if House Bill 3240 comes to the governor in a form which still makes licensure of the remaining 50% optional within charter schools, that's not sufficient to gain the governor's signature of the charter school bill, and as I said, he has noted he would veto it. But if it does come to him with provisions he's suggesting, namely requiring licensure of the remaining 50%, but also instituting this, we believe, is a very flexible license, he will sign the charter school bill. We believe these amendments provide the opportunity to address the one remaining issue and to allow the governor's signature on the charter school bill. So I ask for your support of the governor's amendment.
Thank you, Jean. We do have a few minutes for questions. Yes.
I have one. It's my understanding that there were 9 things outlined that the governor needed, and that Ron Sinceri and his committee met 8.5 of those. And 50%, they said they have to be licensed, and now all. And he vetoed the whole bill, and he got everything he wanted except this half of one.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, Senator Shannon, in the discussion that Senator Harkin and I had this morning, many of the principles were met by action that this committee had already taken. And so it wasn't like we started out with 9 areas of objection. I think the issue, and the people asked the question of me at the time the principles were outlined, which of these are really important? Well, they all were, and that's why they were all put down. The governor articulated all of those principles. I think the concern we have here, or I guess the frustration that we feel, is that there really has been no policy rationale articulated, because
again, when the House Committee listened and they said, well, we'd like to have this kind of person teach, they can. Or this kind of person teach, they can. And so we believe that the current alternative licenses, in fact, are as much flexibility. If we put this one additional, this additional license in there, it certainly provides both flexibility for charter schools as well as public oversight. And so it's not an issue of 8.5 or 9, it's an issue, I think, of the policy itself.
Thank you. Senator Duncan mentioned the question.
Well, maybe I'm not seeing it, but I see nothing in here dealing with the criminal chair.
Oh, Mr. Chair and Senator Duncan, that is within the charter school bill.
Okay.
Criminal background check is done for all employees. Yes, that's part of all employees.
And discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
The
Mr. Chair and Senator Duncan, let me clarify something. On the criminal background checks, all employees under Senate 100 are subject to that. I'm not sure the issue around discrimination. There is, under the limited license that's currently available, applicants are required to go through an anti-discrimination workshop. That would not be part of the process for the post-school teaching license.
Well, why not?
Senator Duncan, Senator Gordley isn't here. I don't remember if you remember. She wanted the language changed when we had Senate Bill 100 before us, the discrimination language, and she worked with a Northwest Regional Lab, and they got language that was suitable to Senator Gordley and suitable to the House side, and I'm assuming the governor was satisfied with that language. So that's how that was addressed.
And then the child abuse part of it, did you say was in?
The reporting of child abuse?
Right.
I believe that's included within
recognizing
the 100.
Because they're still responsible for that.
Correct.
Well, my concern is this is kind of like the private school, if I have no problem with it, it's misleading in a sense that I've heard people say, well, we're an accredited private school, and I'm not talking about, there are some very fine private schools, okay? I'm not talking about that, okay? The way the Oregon law reads right now, all you do is register. You go in, you file your school, your address, blah, 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 and you're registered. So
you're talking about a private school now.
I'm talking about the private school.
Okay.
The smash for the same thing in that all I'm seeing right here is all you're doing is sending in what you're going to teach, and they're going to say what you qualified, and so that's about it. It's just pretty simple, isn't it? I mean, it's just on the record.
Mr. Chair and Senator Duncan, we would expect that TSPC would issue some judgment as to whether they have some experience, but we believe it's quite flexible, and
I don't see a judgment call for us to see it.
Okay, could we we'll get back to that?
What's a judgment call in here?
Okay, fine. And
if you send it in, you mean you should get it.
Yeah, we want to get back to you. And Representative Sinceri, would you please come and testify on what I've asked the committee to do, since virtually everybody has 3 o'clock assignments, is to hear 10 minutes from Gene, which we just did, and 10 minutes from you, or and whatever time it takes to work the bill. So tell us why we should pass out House Bill 3240A in gross without amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ryan Sinceri, State Representative, District 22. This bill is, I think, an important part of this, the whole debate, and I think that it's important because it provides for TSCP to create a charter school license that would be allowed to be used at the option of the charter schools. As you sent, this committee sent Senate Bill 100 to us on the House side originally, you'll remember that there were the first 11 instructors or teachers were not required to be licensed at all, and from that point it was 50-50. We tightened it up and eliminated that 11. And we went back a second time and tightened up the teacher requirements again by saying that not only would there be 50% of the teachers be licensed by TSCP, but they must be the top two certifications. It couldn't be the professional technical, it couldn't be any temporary license, it had to be the top two certifications. So the 50% that are licensed by a charter school must be, or licensed in a charter school, must be the top two certifications. And I think that that's entirely appropriate. As we had testimony at the Bend Community School, we were told by the certified teachers that are working there full-time, not the certified teacher or the non-certified teachers, about 20 of them that are working there, that what is happening in a charter school is not being taught by CSCP. The methodology, those things that are of concern, is not being addressed. So CSCP would have to create an entirely new syllabus, new license, start over again, because they're not covering right now what's going on in most charter schools. I would submit also that we use non-certified teachers throughout our system today, already. We use non-certified teachers in our alternative schools. We use non-certified teachers in our private contract schools, and they have met with great success. There's also been a criticism that we need to be able to have teachers that we know are qualified. If you're going to be able to speak French, we ought to know that you've at least been to Paris. The fact is that we need to have some confidence in our parents. If a person on this committee was going to hire a welder, you wouldn't hire a welder that couldn't weld. You wouldn't do it. And I think it's entirely reasonable to expect that when a school district charters a public charter school, that they're going to make sure that those who teach can teach the subjects that they say that they're going to teach. In other words, if we're going to have somebody teach bookkeeping, then we're going to make sure that that person is either licensed with the state as a bookkeeper, or that's their qualifications, or that they have some experience in the past of having done that, or the charter school wouldn't hire them, and certainly the parents would not allow it. Now, there's another instance where we're using non-certified teachers in our public schools, and I've just come across this as I've dug through this, and I hope this will be good information even for the governor as he makes this further consideration, and that is we have in our public schools, traditional public schools, we're called teachers of record. Now, what that means is that we've got people out there teaching classes, regular classes required for graduation classes, that are not licensed, that don't even have high school diplomas. And I would submit to the committee that there are several instances of those situations right now. Now, TSCP does not even require line-of-sight supervision for those non-certified teachers that are teaching in our public schools today. So if we're not requiring 100% certification, even in the traditional public schools, why would we want to say you must absolutely have 100% certification in the schools that we're going to create as charter schools? Now, the whole concept of charter schools is to be innovative and to be creative and to be something that will hopefully blaze a trail that we can come back in 2 years or 4 years and say to the rest of our traditional public schools, we want to release you from these rules and these regulations and these statutes and these administrative rules because we've proven successful. Now, I expect that given the time frame, that we're probably only going to see about 10 or so charter schools started in the next year or so if we're able to pass this bill out and it's signed by the governor. We're talking about maybe 150 teachers at most, and if 50% of those have to be certified, we're talking here about maybe 75 teachers at the most that will be governed by the local school, by the local school district, and by the parents that are involved in this. All that to say is what we're really looking at here is a pilot program. We're looking at piloting charter schools in Oregon to see if we can accomplish what's been accomplished in some other states. And I think that we need to consider that. We need to do all that we can do if we're going to allow charter schools to exist, to make them successful. That's the point of this. If we unduly restrain charter schools, if we put so many clamps upon them that they can't be successful, then we're doing a disservice not only to our public school system, but to the children who are looking toward that innovation. And so I think that looking at it from that creative standpoint, it's good for us to consider this, to be able to look at this. I also think that we're looking in, and this is in terms of the success of these schools. And that is that if we're going to require that these schools will function on 80% of the funds, then to allow teachers to come who choose on their own volition because they believe in the project, as we've had wonderful demonstration in terms of testimony. If they choose to come and work for less because they're functioning on 80% of the funds, then they ought to be allowed to do that. And that goes to certification as well. So I think that this is a situation that really is a win-win situation for everybody involved. We do it all across our state, and we're even doing it, come to find out, in our own traditional public schools today. So I think it's entirely appropriate for us to require 50% of the teachers to be working and overseeing what's going on in these charter schools, but to allow the flexibility and the professionalism of people licensed in so many trades to be able to come and to be involved in this without having to be specifically certified.
Thank you, Representative. Question or comment, Senator Clinton? Yes, do you have the Dash 5 amendment, if they would?
I don't.
That's the minority report.
Right.
Okay. Well, you know, I think the breakthrough that comes is going to come lines 9, 10, 11 on page 4, Ron, of those amendments. They talk about the application shall include a description of the background of the applicant that is relevant to the teaching position, including any post-secondary education or other experience. Now, we had a dialogue going on before you got here, and Senator Duncan raised a very interesting point. I couldn't tell whether or not you simply, your application just had to fill that out, and you showed whether or not you had any experience of post-secondary education. That doesn't mean you couldn't still be allowed to teach in the charter school. Now, maybe the next line, subject to approval of the application under the rules established by the commission, it has to make a value judgment. I don't want to get into that. I just want to ask this one question. Would you be opposed if there's an application and there's two lines? One is to show any experience you may have, a post-secondary education, so that at least on file, there's a public record on file for whomever, that what's your, it doesn't mean you still can't teach. You can still teach if the school board or the parents told you that, but at least the world would know, because it's public dollars, what was in your application that showed your secondary education or lack thereof, or your experience and lack thereof. Would you be opposed to that kind of application? Again, you understand my question I'm asking? I'm not trying to set you up. I'm just asking, and Gene was here talking before you were removed because you can't. What about that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I think that that's entirely acceptable. And my understanding of this and in my discussions with Cindy Hunt, one study of counsel, is that it's exactly what is provided for in this area here. I think that that's something that the charter school can already require as a charter school, and they can put it in their charter when they make their application to the local school district that is what they're going to require of the teachers. And so I don't see anywhere where they can't do that if they want to do that.
But you're not opposed to it. If that was the interpretation of this, you wouldn't be opposed to that language being added. If that kind of interpretation, the one I just gave, was the right interpretation. If you want to think about it, I realize this is a very sensitive situation that's going on here. And maybe this is better talked about out of the room or something like that. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, again, I think that is available to the charter schools presently. I'm not sure that we need to have some kind of language changing that to a point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Other questions, Senator George?
Just to caution you, before we went through this earlier on 100 and then they voted no, so you understand that. If we could, though, I have a couple friends of mine that teach in community colleges, and they may have some sort of license that's now established. You know the process, because I know they're not teachers, they're professional people that come in and share, do regular classroom studies, but yet bringing the reality of the business community.
Senator George, could I call David Knighton to come up? Did you hear the senator's question, David? Can we state the question? And you go ahead and comment.
Sure. My comment on that is that I don't believe that a person has to be licensed by TSCP to teach in higher ed or community colleges, just K through 12. There are people who are professionals licensed with the state in their trade or their profession who are able to teach in those classes. Now, I believe that those same people can receive, Dr. Knighton responded, but I believe those same people can receive a professional technical license with TSCP and go into the K-12, but within 3 years, I believe, they have to demonstrate that they're working towards certification to be able to get that professional technical license.
Yeah. David, would you respond to Senator George's comment or
David Meissen, Executive Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Mr. Chair, Senator George, your question, I think, was with regard to community college instructors providing instruction.
It's reasonable for K-12 if, in fact, we allow something similar to what's being described as not a normal certification process for charter schools, or a different kind of certification. And there is a different kind of certification, I understand, for community colleges.
May I ask, are we speaking of a community college instructor teaching at the high school campus?
No, we're just talking about teaching at the community college.
Community college instructors are not required to be licensed, and for the most part, the qualifications to be a community college instructor are a master's degree in the subject you're going to teach. And for part-time employment in the community college, it's essentially what the program director for that program finds acceptable in terms of academic experience, academic work and experience.
Okay. That does answer my question, because it would be very similar to those who would be chartering a school and the school district would be supervising and say, okay, we have a qualified person here and they can go into the classroom. What I'm thinking about, just 2 weeks ago, down in Newport, had a wonderful shop teacher down there who does wonderful work for keeping kids involved in the school system by getting them involved in automobile repair. And you think about how many people that can come in and teach those classes in the high school or in a charter school relative to those kind of trades, who would not be able to teach? That probably would be the most current in the field, because they're actually out there in the workplace doing that and be able to share that with our young people. So thank you.
Other questions from the Senator?
Mr. Chair, I was going to say that what he just described, I mean, you can do that now in the public school. The person you just described, right?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, the person could do that, and there are two or three provisions. One, there is an exemption for community college instructors who teach in school-to-work and CAM programs, and they're not required to be licensed. The other provision is that the district can bring in people who are experts as guests, mm-hmm. and they can be... They can do instruction in that role. And the third is what Representative Sinceri described earlier, the limited license that does make it possible for the districts to employ those people in very specific assignments like radio, television, or aviation ground school, or other kinds of very specific assignments.
There's another check and balance that's in here with in the higher ed community, and that's your accreditation. And your accreditation teams come in, and they need to make the check your adjunct very, very closely. So you have to, you know, the relationship has to be there. So it is a check and another check and balance. It doesn't exist within the secondary school system. I heard a lot of adjunct professors, mm-hmm. but when the evaluation teams came in, they checked everything about those professors the same as they would full-time.
Yeah. Other questions for Senator, or Representative Sinceri?
Representative Sinceri, then I think what you're suggesting with the bill is then that basically, since we have an alternative program in community colleges, even people who can come into the K-12 unit, but this isn't really much difference. This is basically saying you'll find another way of certifying someone to be prepared to be in a classroom. Is that correct? Or?
Yes, sure, Senator Georgia, essentially. But we certainly are not advocating unqualified teachers. That would be foolish. Yeah. I would simply say that of the 35 states that are already doing this, including the District of Columbia, I've not contacted all of them, but I have contacted a number of them. And one of the questions I have asked, has there ever been an instance where a grossly unqualified person has been allowed to be involved in teaching? And without exception, we would never allow such a thing. And the parents, being much more closely involved in the charter schools than in the traditional schools, would never allow that as well.
I can do a quick follow-up. We have folks, and I mean, it's been quite a long time ago, many of you heard this story. What's a teacher had a little bit of brain damage in a car accident and literally was in a condition mentally when they became frustrated that they threw things at students, including one day a hammer. And it was a very difficult thing to get them removed from the classroom. We're not talking about putting anyone like that in the classroom. We're talking about a set of practices that certifies that this is a person that belongs in the classroom and can meet the needs of those students. In fact, then allowing somebody who maybe hasn't gone through the normal process, that may have special talents that could be brought in there to be able to do that. Is that correct?
Other questions?
Certainly. This is David Knighton, and something I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, David, come to the table, please.
The sheriff is through.
Yes, right. We'll follow you if we.
I just was represented in serious statements. I could, quickly, if you got in just a second. What's this teacher's record?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan, I believe Representative Spencer is speaking of instructional assistance and the role that the licensed teacher plays in supervising that instructor. The Department of Education has responsibility for establishing the requirements for instructional assistance.
Right.
David, speak up a little bit. I can't hear in the back of the room. Get the mic in front of you. Thank you.
And speaking of instructional assistance, and the Department of Education has the responsibility for establishing the instructional assistant responsibilities. It is possible for instructional assistants to provide a certain level of instruction once a licensed teacher has provided the initial instruction and provided the licensed teacher does the evaluation of student performance.
If my clarification would be that you could have reading groups, and your instructional assistants could take your slower group, your fast group, or something like that. You talk about something beyond that?
That is true as far as the example you gave. In special education, some of these people actually work in buildings, school buildings, and the services provided by educational service districts, the instruction is. So there are a variety of applications of the instructional assistance. In Portland, we had programs where there were what were called community resource professionals who provided talented and gifted programs for Portland Public School middle school students. And there were teachers of record who oversaw that process and were responsible for evaluating student performance.
So they were working with individual students in special ed or something like that?
In this case, these people were providing instruction for talented, gifted. A published author, for example, would provide a short course for students interested in writing.
Oh, sure.
And those were judged to be acceptable assignments for instructional assistants to have.
Did you share?
Yeah.
Comment on that, Senator Duncan. What I have here is a list of people where it actually is far more than that, where the certified teacher hasn't been in the classroom all year long. We have assistants teaching German. We have assistants teaching economics. And the administrative rule does not require line-of-sight supervision, which means that the certified teacher does not have to be in the classroom at all or even in the building. And so we've got a situation where this is going on, and I've got some more emails from other teachers and other school districts who have said that it's going on a significant amount.
I'd love to see that. Now, this is a
new one. Other questions for Representative Ron Sinceri, has to go back to the committee.
Yeah, I'd like to know where that's happening. What schools and what districts is that happening? And what are the situations where that's happening where someone wouldn't have any supervision if they're not qualified to teach in the classroom. I don't know if Jim Green would have the answer to that or not. He's here in the room.
Oh, he has the material.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, even a copy of the emails from the teachers that said that
I would think the general public would have some concerns about that if they're footing the bill for all of this.
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, the fact is that it's entirely legal. I'm not suggesting that anything that's going on is illegal. They're following administrative rule, and it's being implemented according to the law.
Thank you. Okay. Gene Thorne, do you want to come back to the table since we didn't have a chance to interrogate you? Are there questions or comments for Gene? I know. Okay. Any questions for Gene? Or Gene, do you have any comments on what you have just...
Actually, I do have one question.
Sure.
Would this limit, this amendment limit on how this special licensing could be used? It could only be used at a particular school or?
Mr. Chair and Senator, can I ask that this particular new public charter school teaching license would just be available at the charter school that applied with the applicant?
Okay. If I had to go teach someplace else, they'd have to go through a regular licensing process.
And I might add, you know, that Head Start schools, for instance, do not require any teaching licensing now, although I'm told that Head Start schools are heading towards requiring some sort of licensure, and whatever we develop, the TSDC by rule or in the statute, I would want that to be appropriate to the Head Start teachers also.
I have a friend whose husband taught at Roseburg, and he never took any classes to be a teacher. He was a home builder, and he taught not shop, but how to build houses, and they got high school credit for it.
Okay, we do need to move along now. Any other questions for Jean or her comments? Trish Bosick, do you want to make any comments? This is a public... Bosick, not Bosick. Well, we are. We're past time. All of us have 3 o'clock, but this is important.
Senator, members of the committee, I'm Teresa Bozak with the Oregon Education Association. Our position on this is a little bit different than the two you have heard articulated already. We feel like the licensure options that are available through TSDC presently are sufficient to work in the public charter schools that are proposed. Even in the Dash 5 amendment, we feel like it's offering flexibility for a situation that's maybe not in need of flexibility. So we do not support House Bill 3240. So that's our position on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Questions or comments, Patricia? Thank you very much. Members, I'm going to propose that, first let me tell you why I'm proposing this. At the very best, the very most, we would have maybe 10 charter schools, newly initiated charter schools. I'm not talking about conversions of alternative schools or anything like that. And charter schools typically are small schools, for some design. So I'll use the figure of 250 students, 10 charter schools. If we could get along now, if we could make application, the window closes on June 1st, and so we'd have 2,500 students involved during the time before we come back here in a year and 10 months. That would be one half of 1% of the 540,000 students here. That would mean we'd have about 175 teachers. 85 would be required to have a regular teaching license, and 85 would not have to be licensed, except they would not be on the list of the applicants to the sponsors as a licensed teacher, but their background would be given, because we do want to find out who's in the building. But I tell you, after seeing who's teaching at Head Start, for instance, and I do not know of a single instance, or at least it has not been reported by Alex Medler from the U.S. Department of Education, or Eric Premack, who is the Charter School Development Center person in the existing public charter schools that have laws where there have been bad teachers, and I would even say there are qualified teachers, and you can be a qualified teacher and not necessarily hold a license, in my opinion. And so I want to see us in the worst way. I want to see Senate Bill 100, and I want to see the A. M. Gross bill passed for all the reasons that we've talked about for 4 years, and so I'm not editorializing any further, and I will move that the A. M. Gross Senate Bill 3240 be sent to the floor of the House, Senate, with a D-class recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chairman, because I was out of the room for a time, I just need some clarification on where we are. Your motion is not inclusive of the Dash 5?
No, it is not. It's just for the A and Gross. Mm-hmm. And there's several reasons for that. I believe that the A and Gross and Senate Bill 100, of course, you know, protects, you know, our children in terms of a safe environment of learning, that we don't need to try to have this special license. Maybe when we come back here in next session, we'll want to do something much different. But and I say that the applicant to the local school board will be very careful. The local school board will have the opportunity to turn down anyone who is there applying to teach in this school if they feel they're not qualified. And so, again, I'll say qualified, licensed aren't necessarily the same. And and I'm hoping that, you know, the governor will agree to sign this so that we can immediately start our applications for the federal grants that are available.
Well, Mr. Sheridan, I inquire.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, hasn't the governor already indicated that he would not sign?
That's what he has said, yes.
And did we hear anything contrary to what I just said from Ms. Thorn earlier?
No.
Then, Mr. Chair, help me out here.
Sure.
You know, politically speaking, I just don't get it, okay? If we know that we're sending something that is going to bring a veto, but there is still an opportunity, I guess I'm questioning how seriously the proponents, you know, keep in mind, I voted for this in the Senate, as did Senator Courtney. I'm left questioning how seriously you want the bill. I mean, you know it isn't going to make it on the ballot, should it go to a ballot. So why put something forward that you know isn't going to be fine? I just don't get it. Why are we not continuing to struggle this through and get to another place?
Okay, well, that's a good question, and I'm happy to respond to that. Number one is if we do amend this bill, of course, we have to get concurrence in the House. And I don't think that is possible. Number two, I want to give the governor the opportunity to sign this so that he can demonstrate that it's not political, as you say, political in the teachers' union insisting that there be another licensing category. And the reason I feel very strongly on this, Senator, and you and I have agreed on more things than we disagreed on education, but I think this is an important statement for this legislature, this state to make, because in the state of California, the teachers' union there has taken credit for electing a Democratic governor, a Democratic assembly, and a Democratic Senate. And there is today in the Assembly Senate Committee a bill that would require 100% licensing of all charter schools. Mm-hmm. They don't even require that of their traditional public schools. So I think that this is an opportunity, you know, for the governor to agree, you know, with what you just heard me say.
I'm not finished yet. Okay, thank you. I wonder if it really is an opportunity. It doesn't seem to me at this juncture with an amendment in front of us.
Excuse me, Senator, I didn't catch the last
one. It just seems to me, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, that what's going on here is a willingness to miss an opportunity. And that's the part I don't get. Again, if it goes to the ballot, it isn't going to make it. This is the opportunity. This is the only opportunity.
How do we know that?
You know, it's an educated guess on my part.
Okay.
All right. And so this is it. I'm just struggling here, just trying to understand.
Well, you raised the politics of it, and I explained to you where I see the politics of it, and I don't mean to, you know, demean your thinking.
I know you don't.
I agree with you.
I know you don't, and I know you wouldn't impose your thinking on mine here. I'm just saying we're so close. I think I even read that today in the Oregonian. We're so close.
X-ray. And so I'm just not understanding.
I think it's time for the governor to work with us. I think we gave on 8.5 of this, and I think it's time for the governor to show a little that he can work with the legislature. He wrote, I don't saw the list, he demanded these things, he got them all, but 100% of the teachers being certified, 50%. We got 8.5. I think he did good.
What do the students get? The students that we say need an alternative, what do they get if you walk away from the opportunity? That's help me here.
Well, I guess we look at opportunities differently. I think the governor has an opportunity if he would sign 100 and the aim goes to 3240. But for the reasons this is truly a pilot program. You know, we're talking about between now and the next session, possibly 10 schools. I mean, you and I are going to be back here next session, and if there are some problems that have come to the front, well, we'll correct them. But I can't imagine a problem, at least in this pilot program, these early schools, where you're going to have an unqualified teacher. And that's what the governor and his staff talks about, a qualified teacher. And what I say is there's a lot of qualified teachers out there that don't necessarily hold a teaching license.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, there's probably some qualified surgeons out there, but they're licensed doctors. I mean, I think that, you know, for the governor and for those of us who are very concerned about having unlicensed people in our schools, it is about accountability. It's about making sure that who is there being paid with public dollars is qualified to be there. I have a very serious concern about this, too. Other thing that concerns me about this is that if you know that it's headed for a veto and you continue to do this, I'm very concerned that we will see what happened last session where we have the charter school bill once again, you know, tied to some other piece of legislation that the leadership wants to get through this body, and it will either kill another transportation package or some other issue, because otherwise this makes no sense to send it to him when he's already said he's going to veto it. Why send it to him when you know he said he's not going to sign this bill unless you put this part in it? It just doesn't make any sense.
We'll recess for 1 minute, please. Section 1 and then Section 2. Now, does this address the law that we're proposing in Senate Bill 100?
Speaking of pay and growth.
Pay and growth.
This is the original bill that was meant to remove.
So explain to us what that means.
Please tell me the section.
Section 2 on page 1.
Okay.
Senator Duncan raised the question, well, doesn't this bill require, you know what it says there, but that's the present law, isn't it? Or is it?
Mr. Chair, I'm David Meissen again, and with regard to this, A and Gross has a whole program for alternative licensure. The first 9 sections, I have some printed testimony I prepared to bring you, and I'd be glad to distribute it, but sections 1 through 9 are a proposal from Representative Hill, and this creates an alternative license, and it could be used for high school teaching on application based upon work experience and a graduate degree. In terms of the others, like elementary teachers, there would have to be a district plan or a district program for alternative licensure, and that would place upon the district the responsibility for instruction, supervision, and evaluation of candidates in training. There's also a requirement that the Department of Education would have to train people to be the supervisors of those programs. So sections 1 to 9 are a full-blown alternative licensure program that's even more restrictive than our current transitional license. I brought along also a list of various licenses that TSPC has, the initial and continuing and transitional and limited licenses, and I've mentioned those in this kind of testimony. I'd be glad to pass them out if you have any need for that.
Okay, Senator Duncan, did you get your question answered?
Yeah.
So now, how does that relate to Senate Bill 100? Is what that Senator.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe the first nine sections of that bill relate to Senate Bill 100 at all, and I was surprised when that bill came through the House that they didn't get it and put in the proposed amendment from Representative Sanceri. If you notice, the Dash 5 amendments did get the bill and replaced it with the language that the governor had proposed.
But so tell me, what harm does that do to the fact that it wasn't gutted?
Mr. Chair, it creates a brand new alternative license, which we don't currently have, and it requires the development of these programs that would be jointly administered by the district, the teacher ed institution, and the Department of Education. It would have minimal fiscal impact on the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, but there is a significant impact on school districts.
If that license was developed?
If those alternative programs were developed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And if we passed Engross Senate Bill 3240, that would be implemented?
The districts would not be required to have such programs, but it creates the vehicle for them to have an alternative program. For all intents and purposes, it creates teacher education programs within school districts that would parallel what are now being offered by colleges and universities.
If the school districts chose to do that.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
And the boards are not mandated to do it.
I did not read it as mandatory for the district.
No, it's
yeah. Right.
To create the alternative license, though, would be required of TSPC.
It's just not what you've been talking about. I mean, I don't mind it at all, but it's a very strenuous thing. It's an internship,
but it's not required as far as Senate Bill 100 is concerned.
For all the school districts.
Yeah,
right.
It's not.
So what protection for the
children? Okay, so what does it do with charter school? That's what I don't understand.
It's charter section 10 does deal with charter schools, and there's a new license specifically for charter schools.
Mr. Chair, unless there's an order here for you that you've got to get out today, I am swimming right now. I mean, I'm not even going to delay this thing. I am swimming as to what is going on. I now heard about there's yet another amendment by Ron in Surrey, which I don't know where that is. There's the governor's amendments and things, and unless you have your orders, you got to send it out today. Why can't we do it on Wednesday? I'm not trying to play games this evening. You can do what you want to do. I just don't know.
Why can't Senator Representative Sanceri come back and clarify it?
And I'm not trying to, no way am I trying to mess things up here, Mr. Chair. I know you're taking over, but Jesus, I am swimming.
Well, tell me what you don't understand to be. We heard Ron Sanceri say that it wasn't required.
But Dan, what did you just say about a gotten stuff and here's a mirror?
Yeah, what are we talking about?
He felt
that. We didn't.
Okay, let Jan explain the gut and stuff part. Because this is...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is that when Senate Bill 100 was on the floor of the Senate and being voted on, there was some discussion about creating a charter school teacher license. This is it.
if Representative Cesari looked in the bills that he had in committee to see what would be an appropriate vehicle in terms of that language, and he looked at relating to clauses, and he had House Bill 3240 in his committee, which related to teacher licensing. And so he took that bill, and he added to that bill his amendment that would direct CSTC to develop a charter school teaching license that makes it optional, so a teacher in a charter school wouldn't need to get that license. And he left the content of the original bill in, and it came over to us with both the original provisions involving this alternative teaching license section and the charter school amendment. There was some confusion on my part in terms of whether that was their original intention. I had been told two different things. And so just for emergency purposes, I had drafted an amendment that would remove the original 3240. But I'm told now that Representative Cesari supports 3240A as it is and wouldn't support removing the original language.
And 3240, the original language that gives school districts an option to have an education program. David, is that your understanding?
Mr. Chair, that is my understanding. That's optional for districts, but mandatory that the commission establish such a track, an alternative for licensure track.
Mr. Chair, can we get Jane's interpretation of why the minority report is being replaced by the Dash 5 amendment totally?
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, the Dash 5 amendments are the minority report.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay.
And the minority Dash 5 amendments do remove all the basic pieces that are in 3240 now and just establish the charter school teaching license, but we go into some detail about what the applicant would have to do, and we relate back to Senate Bill 100 and say, with this public charter school teaching license now, all professional staff must be licensed in some manner.
Okay, Duncan and Gordon.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm having some problems wondering what's wrong with the governor's amendment. To be truthful, I think the governor's amendments are pretty watered down. And I'm having trouble seeing what are you saying they will pass it over there? They seem to be in the,
I can't guarantee what they're going to do, nor can I guarantee whether the governor was going to do so.
Yeah. Well, it just seems to me that all you're asking them to do is to match what your qualifications are, what the job is, and then TSDC will write administrative rules. I assume that that's what they're going to try to see. Is there a match? If there's a match, you're going to give them a charter school license.
That's correct.
It seems to me it's pretty simple, and that's where I'm having trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I may have trouble, but I can live with that. That's where I'm.
Mr. Gordon?
Mr. Chair, are we in work session?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair,
I don't think I did take us out of public hearing. So
I think it's only fair that Representative Cesari come and say why that's unacceptable. He spent so many hours on this and worked on it.
Why the minority?
Why he couldn't support that, because there may be something we're missing.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I'm being called for quorum this year.
And I'm chairing another committee.
Okay, I'm not trying to bug out of this. Is there any way we can do this on Wednesday? You want to do it now? I'm trying to be around.
I know, you are.
And I want to do it now.
Mr. Chair, you can move Andros House Bill 3240.
Yes.
And I call for a question. I'm just wondering, where are we right now?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would like to move the Dash 5 amendment. Would you be willing to...
Sure. With the permission of the caller of the question, Senator Gordley, move the Dash 5 amendments.
I think that we should have... Okay, you can...
Yeah, we can go ahead and do that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there objection to the Dash 5 amendments? I object.
Yes, I object.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Clerk will call the roll.
Just a second.
Well, we can call the roll on the Dash 5 amendments. We can bring it back if we want to.
Okay,
Medicaid, but I really think before we vote, we need to find out why the House didn't accept the Dash 5, and we need to know what the creator of the bill, why it was subjectable. Are we going to, one place the governor's not going to agree, the other one the House isn't, and just before we vote, I think we need to,
okay.
And I've called for Ron, he's on his way.
Okay.
We went to get him, and I just think it's fair that we hear why he couldn't do it.
Fair enough. Is that okay for the members to hear from the Ron,
sure.
Representative?
He's right next door, and I
okay.
thought he was on right after him.
Okay. And Peter, I'm sorry, we'll come and get you if we get to a vote here yet. Where are you, in 357?
Right.
I don't see any dilemmas at all based on what we talked about. But I see your question.
Mm-hmm. And the final part, you know,
what's going to be held up? Your argument is valid because of the issues with the transaction.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm.
She shared one of the letters.
Probably went back to the office.
Mr. Chair, are we at ease?
We are at ease.
Okay.